The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So, might be good to offer a preface for this talk. And the preface is, I think the talk is about love, though I might not talk about love. I'm going to talk about suffering. So you might want to keep that in mind. And certainly I sit here to give this talk about love or suffering with a lot of tenderness in me. And so we'll see how it comes out. So, you know, Buddhism has put a tremendous emphasis on studying suffering. And suffering is this umbrella term that is meant to encompass everything from the most mild discomfort, stress, tension, to the biggest catastrophes of life, the biggest challenges that people have in their lives, and existential issues of death and dying and all kinds of things, loss. And it might be interesting to consider that any given form of suffering that we have can be experienced in one of three ways. It can be experienced as being heavy, it can be experienced as being light, and can be experienced as being weightless. And the degree to which it has these different weights depends on you, not on the suffering. It's kind of what you contribute, in a way. And the heavy suffering, things that are really, we say sometimes that we're weighed down or we're burdened by our challenges. I have a lot of burdens. And, you know, those are metaphors of weight. And I think that when things have a lot of weight, like a black hole, I suppose, compressed weight, it pulls things into its gravitational field. And so when suffering is really heavy, it's very easy to be pulled into its world and sink into it, fall into it, and somehow drown in extreme situations in the strength of what's happening. But it's interesting to try to look a little bit at what makes any kind of suffering heavy in terms of what do we contribute to it? What do we contribute to it in terms of how we relate to it, how we see it, how we, the stories we tell ourselves about what it is. And often the sticky part of suffering, what gives it weight, I'd like to suggest, is not the suffering in and of itself, but rather what we burden the suffering with, what we weigh it down with. So, for example, there might be some run-of-the-mill form of suffering, discomfort, and we experience it. And then overlaid on that is the idea, not again. And that not again is kind of deflating. And it's like, you know, now it's a little getting to be too much. I've had a whole series of things and not this as well. And that's a little overlay on top of it. It's an extra piece that has a lot to do with our subjective experience, the state of our inner health, our resilience, maybe the degree of stress or exhaustion we have given what's going on in our life. There could be some idea that we're suffering and it's rather embarrassing to have this particular suffering. And so, you know, it's so better that no one sees it or admit it, or the fact that a few people know it is rather frightening because they might judge me, they might reject me, they might see me as being something less than something. And so these secondary ideas that we pile on top of the original suffering makes it heavier and denser and more challenging. There could be ideas that I'm not up to deal with this, and I don't know how to solve it, I'm not up to it. This somehow reflects badly on me, and we have an identity or that's formed around the suffering, or we use it to represent ourselves. You know, now I'm a terrible person, or I'm a bad person, or something. And so that's, you know, adding more weight on top of the suffering. And so there's a whole series of things that we might add on top. We might have the idea that if we're the perfect human being, we should be floating happily through our life. And that we shouldn't really admit to people that we're anything less than an enlightened Buddhist. And otherwise, And so the suffering we have then has meaning. We're adding meaning to it, adding interpretations to it. We're adding stories to it. We have predictions we put on top of it. There's suffering, and then the story-making mind imagines a future with this. This means that tomorrow, the next day, the next year, that terrible things are going to happen. This is going to build. This is going to make things worse. This is going to not have a happy outcome. Something. And so it gets heavier and heavier and heavier. The other way is suffering, the same suffering. It's not like different suffering. The same suffering can be experienced very lightly. It has very little weight. And it's there, and it's certainly has weight in the sense that it's uncomfortable, it's maybe painful to feel and experience. But we're not burdening it, we're not piling on top of it a lot of stories or ideas that are deflating, that are somehow debilitating in that process. The more that we debilitate, the more we pile on these stories, and the heavier the suffering is, chances are the less access we'll have to love, less access we'll have to tenderness or care, less access we'll have to wisdom, to thinking wisely about it. The more likely we're going to react from places of maybe habitual neurosis or habitual unhealthy or unskillful ways that we might kind of respond. But the lighter it is, the less it's piled on with all these extra things, the more easy it is to have access to other aspects of ourselves, maybe the healthy sides, and maybe the love or the tenderness or the compassion, and also wisdom and wiser understanding. The heavier it is, the suffering, because of the weight, it's more difficult to be inspired or encouraged that we have a practice. We have a mindfulness practice, a compassion practice, a meditation practice to help us find our way through it. The lighter it is, the more we have, we can remember we have a practice. That's a powerful practice that offers a path through the suffering. Now, those are two different stories we make up, two different interpretations and ideas. One of them, I would suggest, it can be debilitating. You know, I don't have a practice, I don't know what to do, this is overwhelming, I can't do anything. The other one, to really have taken refuge in the practice, to really feel the power of the practice or to trust the practice, gives us a way to go through it. Even if we don't see how we're going to go through it, we have some ability we have a trust that we can, and that makes it lighter. That's a story which maybe makes it a little bit lighter. We're not so discouraged, we may be encouraged. I've known people who have suffered and said, "Great, great, this is my chance. I have a practice. I can't wait to get on that retreat or get my cushion or do something because I'm going to really, this is this is an opportunity for me and I'm really going to face this and really look this directly in the eye," as opposed to one of my unhealthy approaches to suffering is the ostrich approach. If I just stick my head in the sand, somehow I don't have to deal with it or doesn't exist or something. So I don't recommend that. But I've known people say, yes, here it is. I'm going to, I know I have a practice. I don't know anything how to go through this, but this difficulty I'm going to show up for. So that's it creates a very different stance. It makes things lighter. Or in some ways, it makes you bigger and stronger. I love this little metaphor that some of you have heard from me before, that if you take a big fly and put it on top of an ant, it's a big deal for the ant. But if the same fly lands on an elephant, it's a no deal for the elephant. So, how would you like to go through the world, as an ant or as an elephant? And I hope that you answer the elephant. Though I can see being a humble ant could be nice, but not for this metaphor. And then part of this feeling that there's some possibility in the suffering, that there is a way through it or some opportunity here, is actually a very powerful reframing of some of the things that weigh us down. And one of the, I think, very meaningful reframes of certain kinds of grief and sadness and anger that we might experience is to allow ourselves to feel it and understand that feeling it, experiencing it in the body, is a way forward, that the body itself has self-healing capacities, has self-liberating capacities. Our whole psychophysical system is a self-healing and self-liberating system, if we allow it to. And allowing it to, we don't allow it to if we have these, burden our suffering with all these layers and layers of ideas, interpretations, and reactivities to it. But if we can step back and feel it, and that's why sometimes feeling it in the body is so powerful, because the body itself is generally not a reaction. The reactions kind of come from the mind. And so if we can just feel and sense, we're kind of sidestepping, bypassing the story-making mind, the interpretive mind, the predictive mind, and we're feeling the experience in and of itself in the simplicity of the physical experience, even though it could be quite painful physically. The heart could be, feels like it's being stabbed by daggers, or the stomach could feel all in knots, and there's all kinds of ways in which suffering is experienced. But to have confidence that's one very valuable way to be with suffering, and then have a path, have a way. I can feel this. The story, the idea of what happened is so big, it's overwhelming. And if I keep telling myself stories and keep spinning out, it just kind of can bury me under the weight of it. But if I can somehow step out of the story and just allow myself to feel it physically, it's bad enough. But that makes space for it and opens up. It allows some of the self-healing and self-liberating aspects of our system to operate. It makes room for things to evolve. But then there's also some stories or interpretations, ideas we can add to our suffering that are easier to add once we get familiar to stay resting or trusting to feel it physically. And that is, we can add the story that in that physicality, in that direct experience, the immediacy of how we're suffering, in this system of ours, psychophysical system of ours, if we're really there and feel and make space for it, something wants to be born. What is it that wants to be born? What is it to stay and settle in and feel that physical experience, feel the immediacy of what that's like, and sit there with a question, what is it that wants to be born here? And not to analyze and think and figure out and, with the mind, but rather sit there with that question and then kind of like wait to see what happens, to be with it with that attitude. Now, maybe this is a silly, let's say even if maybe it's a silly idea. Let's say that for a moment. It still creates, it changes the inner landscape. That's a much lighter attitude. That makes it lighter. It makes room for it. It doesn't burden it with debilitating stories and ideas and reactivity. It creates a kind of more space, because it kind of like, with that attitude, it's kind of like, okay, you're allowed to be there. And I don't know what you're up to, but I'm going to allow you to be there, and we're going to find out. And so that changes the inner landscape, changes the room in which this inner emotions and feelings and sensations can begin shifting and changing. But it's not just a physical shift, because our physical body experience is intimately tied to our mind and our psychology and our emotions. If we begin creating room and space for things to move and unfold and open it physically, it actually begins to process and change things in the mind, in the psychology, often in ways that maybe we couldn't have imagined ourselves. You know, we're not smart enough to understand all the different aspects of our psychophysical being. And so it kind of makes room for something healthy and other to happen, to move through. So this very thing, what wants to be born here? What wants to come arise out of this? So rather than the suffering weighing us down, it's more like the suffering is going to lift us. It's going to like be an upwelling. Some people love the metaphor of wellsprings. Their suffering is a wellspring. One person I know talked about what a difference her suffering was when she recognized it as the wellspring of her compassion. And you know, without that suffering, this beautiful qualities of compassion wouldn't have been born for her. And so she had a whole different story or relationship to her suffering when she saw that it was, wow, something can be born out of it. What it means also to allow it, to ask what it wants to be born here, to make space for it and feel it, it also comes along, I think, with the attitude, or can come with the attitude, let me be affected by this. Let me be informed by this. Let me be influenced by this suffering. And that's a different attitude that than this is too much, I don't want it, I want to push it away, I want to deny it, I want to fix it as quickly as I can. What if our whole system, evolutionary system that we are, was created in all kinds of wise ways to help this system respond healthily to all the challenges it has? If we allow ourselves to feel it, allow ourselves to be affected by it, allow ourselves to be touched by it. So I'm not saying these are true ideas exactly, but they're true enough, often enough. But they are attitudes and understandings which shift the weight. They're ones that kind of lift the heaviness from our suffering and create a sense of lightness, more space and ease. And the challenging thing I'm saying today, which I'm hoping is a little bit challenging, hopefully you don't get angry too much, that I certainly don't want to add salt on how you're suffering and make it worse for you. But what the challenging thing I'm saying here is that the same suffering that you have can either be experienced in a heavy way, dense way, or it can be experienced in a light way, or kind of spacious way. And the difference between heavy and light is your reactivity, what you do, what you bring to it. And that this idea of, so lately I've had sadness, and I've sat and experienced my sadness, and I asked myself, what wants to be born here? It was a beautiful question. And I would sit with it, and I've learned over the years not to sit there like a cat at a mouse door, waiting to see. Like I used to be when I first started doing this practice, I used to have like physical pain or suffering, and I would mostly I was interested in it to go away. That was the only kind of, only idea I had. Either there or it's gone. And so I was just kind of like, okay, I've been told this practice works, so I'm going to sit with my pain or my suffering, and I'm going to watch it because I'm going to watch it go away. And And so I spent a lot of time in the cushion waiting and watching. And the kind of what cured me of this, like this, especially on retreats, I would go to lunch or go to a meal or something, go do walking meditation or something, do something different. And then I'd come back and I'd sit down to meditate and I'd focus. I was going to, okay, I'm going to really watch this. It's gone. It disappeared when I wasn't watching. So it happened often enough, and now I've learned to watch and be present. But I don't expect to see change. I don't expect to see, you know, sometimes it changes, sometimes it doesn't, sometimes it shifts, sometimes it goes away. But I'm not sitting there, you know, like the cat at the mouse trap, at the mouse door. But this question, when I had my sadness, you know, okay, I'll feel it, and I felt it physically. It was uncomfortable, certainly. But I've learned how to be comfortable with discomfort in this practice. So I sat and breathed with it and made space for it. And I certainly feel that this question, what wants to be born here, made it light. Made it kind of like, the image I had was a little bit like a volcano. You know, it's about to, you know, go. Maybe that's too violent, but you know, that's something upwelling. Something wants to upwell. And as usual, I didn't see anything change. And it was that way for many days, and nothing changed. And then I found myself feeling a lot more love for people at other times, more than was had been common for me in recent times. And I felt very tender and soft and just, I felt so much appreciation and love for people. And after a little while, I thought, wait a minute. Maybe that's what was waiting to be born. Maybe this very suffering I had around my sadness, maybe that's what allowed or made space for, or a tenderness, or allowed me to touch into something deeper, or made room for something deeper to operate, or for some feeling of love to kind of vibrate or come up or to surface. Maybe this suffering and sadness I felt, maybe it was like a meat tenderizer that was tenderizing the crusts of the heart, the hardness of the heart. And I needed to feel that, you know, that sadness to get tenderized, because maybe I had gotten a little bit hard or something, I don't know. And so that was kind of cool, I thought. So I don't know if there's a correlation, but I kind of think there is. That's what wanted to be born. So what wants to be born when you're angry? What wants to be born if you're really still and quiet and allow yourself to feel it? You know, sometimes in anger you feel it like that, and what wants to be born then is rage. That's okay, but what wants to be born? And perhaps what wants to be born in the end is your courage or your strength, you know, rather than love or kindness. Or, you know, all kinds of things can come out. So this is all a way of making it lighter. So what we tell ourselves about our suffering has big consequences. You're not innocent. Maybe one or two of you are, in case you, so you don't get angry with me. But you know, you're not innocent about how you relate to your suffering. We are putting on sometimes very subtle attitudes and stories and predictions and reactions to it that makes it heavier than it needs to be. And we can, within reason, come up with better stories, better reactions, better ideas about it, how to be with it. If you spend too much time making up stories, it can be dangerous. It can be kind of sometimes very easy to make a kind of paint it better than it is, or pretend, or the stories are not realistic, or takes us away from reality rather than towards it. And I've known people who've made stories about their suffering, and I just felt, you know, kind of happy, wonderful stories. And I just felt that they were distancing themselves from it and, you know, kind of shutting off from it. So that's why this mindfulness practice is so helpful. We keep going to come back to our direct experience. As long as we have some way of coming back into the immediacy of our direct experience, a physical felt sense of the experience, then simple stories, simple ideas of reframing the experience you'll feel the consequence, and you'll be protected from making it sentimental or fantasy, because you're keeping back to feel it. What's here? What's here? So the third way, so I said there's suffering has three weights, heavy, light, and weightless. And weightless is pretty cool. Weightless is that we have no reaction to it. Weightless is it's still uncomfortable, but it's no different than hearing the wind outside or watching the fall leaves fall or looking at a tree and just appreciating the tree for the tree-ness and not seeing, well, that tree is too crooked. You know, that branch, you know, somehow is poking in the wrong direction. It's just a branch, it's just a tree, it's just a twisted tree, and it's just a part of nature. It's possible to experience our own suffering without any identification, without any meaning-making, without any predictions, identifications, without seeing, experiencing it, and using it to represent ourselves, but to see it as this is part of nature. This is a complete, this, you know, we're part of nature, we're part of this phenomenal 5 billion year process of the universe taking shape in this way. And it's kind of phenomenal that all this, you know, all this capacities we have and experience we have, I mean, even the fact that we suffer, I mean, wow. I mean, that's kind of like awesome. Who knows why evolution evolved in such a way that human beings suffer? It must have been a good reason, because evolution usually doesn't do too many things casually or, you know, or without a purpose or some value. And so it's just a natural function. It's just a nature. And to not see it that way, to put ourselves out of the flow of the natural world, can be kind of a suffering. It's possible to sit and be present and feel, wow, that hurts. There's pain, there's suffering, there's sadness, there's joy, there's anger, there's love. And not to kind of, just to see, not to see it as something that we pull out of the stream of the natural life as it unfolds. We don't have to take it personally. We don't have to assign meaning to it. We don't have to believe that this means something else or this is where it's going. It's just suffering. There's suffering in this universe, and it's right now it's being experienced locally. There's weather in California, and this is how it is locally right now, the weather. And so there's lots of room in the mind, and to have this suffering be weightless has a lot to do with the weightlessness of the mind, the weightlessness of awareness. When awareness, the capacity to know and be aware, has no weight in it, then it has no self in it. It has no history in it. It has no predictions of the future in it. It has no preferences in it. It just needs lots of space, and it's just phenomena arising and passing. And that's a very precious way and very significant way on the way to the self-liberating way in which our system is set up. It's on the way to liberation, to experience just the weightless quality of suffering. Just there it is. We don't have to do anything with it. Nothing's needed. No assembly required. Suffering and no assembly required. Isn't that kind of nice? No manual required. So, three kinds of suffering: heavy, light, and weightless. And that all has to do with how you are and your contribution and lack of contribution, what you're going on. So I hope that this talk, that you're willing to listen to it or hear it, take it in such a way that you'll investigate this for yourself. In what ways? There might be ways in which what I said doesn't work, but in what ways does it work for you? In what ways, if you study yourself, is this actually the case that you can see how you pile on weight and make it heavy? And what ways do you kind of lighten it and make it light? And just there it is. And are there ways in which it's weightless? No issue. It's still suffering. You can say that, but it's just, it's not even your suffering. There's an ancient saying in Buddhism that comes from 1600 years ago. There is suffering, but no one who suffers. That's the weightless kind of suffering. So those are my thoughts for today. And perhaps if you do this exploration, you might also find that what wants to be born in you is a greater love, care, compassion, kindness for yourself and for the world, and for nothing whatsoever, weightless love. Thank you.